Okay, first of all, a commercial message. Next Wednesday, Mr. Shem, we do have a share, regular time. But and then we're going to be a little bit on the chofesh of the share for a variety of reasons. One being that the two Wednesdays in a row, I'm in Chutz Laaretz, and then there's Tisha B'Av on Tuesday, but there's chofesh mishpachti afterwards. And it bekitza, we're going to be off the line for about a little over a month, and the Torah Tidbits will announce exactly the date of our resumption, but it's going to be closer to the month of Elul. So I'm talking about a 6-week furlough, which usually we do in the summer. You know, we forget. Usually forget these things. Phil Chernovsky and the office upstairs, they are fully aware of this, but next Wednesday we do have a share, okay? When we return, it will be already in the spirit of
joy.
Hearing the shofar already in the morning. Sure. Okay. So anyway, next Wednesday we will already be in the 3 weeks. Bein Hamitzarim, called Rofeha Hisiguha Bein Hamitzarim, a pasuk in Megillat Eicha, first chapter. And Bein Hamitzarim literally means between the straits, where almost the Navi Yirmiyahu, authoring Eicha, talks about a pincer attack of Am Yisrael being crushed from two sides. But the word Meitzar also means borders, and borders can be applied to the calendar, a beginning and an end point of a certain season. And that's how our Chazal explained what we call popularly the 3 weeks. It's called Bein Hamitzarim. And that is a border on one side and a border on the other side. And the first border is the fast of Shavuot Sabbat Tammuz. And the second border is the fast of Tisha B'Av. Just to complicate matters, there is an opinion in the Talmud Yerushalmi that after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, the fast of Tammuz was not the 17th, but it was on the 9th of Tammuz, which is 2 days ago. And add 3 weeks to that date, because there was another tradition that the Bein Hamitzarim are 3 weeks, no matter how you slice the pie. So if the beginning date is the 17th, the end date is going to be Tisha B'Av, 3 weeks later. But if the beginning date is the 9th of Tammuz, then the end date is going to be Rosh Chodesh Av. And I believe this is really the genesis of what we call the 9 days. There's a remnant of the fact that there were some communities or even individuals who observed the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, not on Tisha B'Av, but rather on Rosh Chodesh. And that, you know, triggered the phrase in the Mishnah, Mishenichnas Av Mima'atim V'Simcha. When Av comes around, we reduce Simcha. Okay, so maybe we'll chat about this a little bit next week in that shir, already in the 3 weeks, on the 18th of Tammuz, next Wednesday. But it is one thing we know. It's a period where Ashkenazim have taken upon itself for a long time already not to engage in Simcha, you know, activities of Simcha, gatherings of Simcha, and of course the classic gathering of Simcha is a wedding. So there are no chatunot in the 3 weeks. The only community that actually does have a license to have chatunot in the 3 weeks is the Yemenite community, because the Rambam doesn't mention a thing about Bein Hamitzarim, and those Yemenites who followed Rambam's tradition, that was Rav Kapach, Zichron Lebracha's tradition, they have no limitation of getting married after Shavuot Sabbat Tammuz before Rosh Chodesh Av. But after Rosh Chodesh Av, it's inappropriate for everybody. Mima'atim b'simcha. But the other Sfardim and the Ashkenazim have all taken upon themselves not to have Simcha, or gatherings of Simcha in the 3 weeks. So this already begins. And having said that, there have been many, many wedding invitations since Shavuos going around, because people try to, you know, get it all in before the 3 weeks. And I figured there's a very interesting topic in the Rambam Sefer Mitzvot that deals with the whole issue of the wedding ceremony. And the wedding ceremony in Halacha is actually divided into two different mitzvot. Today we perform both of them under the chuppah in a matter of within 10-15 minutes. That is, the first mitzvah is called Kiddushin, and otherwise known as Erusin. So in modern Hebrew, we use the word Erusin to mean engagement. To a certain degree, it was a halakhic engagement, except that it was a lot more than the popular engagement. The popular engagement simply means the couple has a gentleman's agreement to marry at some future date. There were communities in Israel, in Am Yisrael, that contractually bound the families, and that was called tenoyim. Tenoyim means conditions, and the condition was that if one party backed out, then that party would pay a handsome sum of money to the other family, because it was an embarrassing situation that a party backed out. Because once a party backs out of a shidduch, then the rumor mill works overtime. Why did they back out? You know, something must be wrong with either the chatan or the kala, and it's going to remain a stigma, not only for that one, but for the siblings, it's going to be a stigma. And therefore, that can be translated into a cash value. And that's what tenoyim is all about. Now, the Gemara says that the Amora Rav would give malkot. It's not the formal malkot of Beitin, but would whether it means coercion of some sort, social coercion, or even physical coercion on some level, for those who do not go through kiddushin without shiduchim. Shiduchim in this case means tenoyim. Man Rav Mangid Aman Delo Mekadesh BeKiddushin BeShiduchim. Rav the Amora Rav in Talmud Bavli would penalize the family, the person, if they went through kiddushin without having first gone through shiduchim, which means tenayim. And then comes a oral tradition that it is worse to break such a tenayim arrangement than to get married and get divorced. So there would be people in Europe for the last 1,000 years who, if for whatever reason there was a legitimate reason to break it up before the wedding, but they already were engaged, in our sense of the word, and also had tenoyim, they would go through the wedding and then do a divorce. Which I can only tell you, in my humble opinion, I would never recommend something like that. Never. But because the strength of this minhag was such that you didn't break a tenoyim, so with time, people felt nervous of signing contractually a tenoyim at the time of the engagement. So what would they do? They would delay the signing of the tenoyim until about 10 minutes before the chuppah, where you figure, in which reads in the tenoyim that the two families agreed to bring their children to the wedding, you're figuring if they're all dressed up already and that they're ready, the statistical probability is that they're going to meet at the chuppah in 10 minutes. There have been situations where somebody ran out of that, but okay, that's very, very rare. Very rare. But what do they do at the engagement? So it's a oral type of agreement, and that's where the word vort comes in. Vort in Yiddish means you give our word. We give our word. You know, for some people a word is sacred, and some people a word's not worth anything. But that's called a vort, and later on it was tacked on a l'chaim ceremony, because what do you do with a vort already? You make a l'chaim. So that's what a vort is, or a l'chaim, the way it's practiced in many communities today. What about shattering a dish? So, well, that might be a question of baltashkas. You take a beautiful dish and you break it. So if it goes with tenoyim, so the same reason that we break a glass under the chuppah, don't ask me now why there's a glass and there's a dish. I don't know. That's, you know, who knows why. Because probably your mother-in-law, that's what she got a hand on, you know, and then became a minhag. But I don't know why. But if it goes hand-in-hand with the tenoyim, so, all right, so be it. It's based on the Gemara Maseret Brachot, where one of the Amoraim saw that the level of Simcha was too high, and against the background of the Churban, the destruction of Beit HaMikdash, so he wanted to simmer down the level of Simcha, so he smashed an expensive glass, and everybody said, oh yeah, you know, I felt bad that this happened, and they realized they're supposed to be feeling bad about other things too. So it tempered the level of simcha. So that would apply to a tenoyim as well. What I don't understand is those people who smash a dish at the vort, where there are no tenoyim at that time. So that's probably a question of bal tashrit. Why smash a good glass? But, you know, it's good for the pictures, and then the girl, the kala, gives the pieces to all her friends as a skula. Okay, look, you know, I'm not going to get into that. But Our Rebbe, the Rav Zichron Levracha, said that there's absolutely no value in the Tanoim 10 minutes before the Chuppah, because it's almost a joke. I mean, your two families are contractually binding themselves to bring their children to the Chuppah, which is going to, you know, take place in 10 minutes. I mean, everybody's there already, so it's almost a useless type of contract. I can tell you, in the Siddur Kedushin that I've done, I don't think I ever remember doing a Tanoim for anybody. Some families still do it, I know, I'm aware of it. But that's the story with Tanoim. That's an engagement in our sense of the word. But engagement in the halachic sense of the word is already when the chatan gives something of monetary value. Today, the custom is to give a ring of monetary value to the kala and declares, Harayat Mekudeshet li b'tabadzu k'dat Moshe Yisrael, in the presence of two witnesses. You don't need a whole crowd for that. You don't need a chuppah for that. All you need is two witnesses and a chasen kala and a ring. And not only, you don't even need a chasen kala. All you need is an agent of the chasen kala. Because what I dug up from my pile of notes that I wanted to speak about Sefer Mitzvot, so I saw I once upon a time prepared a shir on the opening of the second chapter of Maser Kiddushin. That's what the title reads. P'ticha, the Perek Sheni Maser Kiddushin. What does that second parak read? It reads, Ha'ish Mekadesh Bo U'Bishlucho. That it means that a person can betroth his wife with himself or with the assistance of a shliach, an agent. Can also do it. Now, not every mitzvah in the book you can do perform with a shliach. Only some mitzvah. We just read Parshat Korach a week and a half ago. So there we learned about the giving of truma and trumat ma'aser, that the Levi gives 10% of what he received in the Ma'aser Rishon. He has to forward it to the Kohen as well, which is also like Truma. And it says, Kein Tarimu Gam Atem, and the Chazal say, Gam Lerabot Shluchachem, that a Truma can be given by a Shliach as well. That's why, if you see, buy a product, a fruit or vegetable product, that the Hashgacha says, Noki Mechshash Tevel, it does not have a problem of Tevel, which is fruit and vegetables that were not Meiser taken off yet, or it might say Hufreshu Trumot to Masrot, the Truma Meiser were taken off. So you didn't do anything. It was done by a Shaliach. Hopefully the Rabbanut, the agency of the Rabbanut, took care of it as a Shaliach on your behalf. So too with Challah, right? You buy bread by Angel's Bakery or Berman's or any other bakery, and it says on it that they took off Challah. You didn't take off Challah, but you trust that they took off Challah as your Shaliach, and that's okay. That's perfectly okay. So there are some mitzvot that you can do with a shlichut, by proxy. One is tzedakah, for that matter. You can have somebody, you can authorize somebody to give tzedakah on your behalf. You'll pay the guy back later, but in the meantime, right? You come to shul, you didn't bring your wallet, and you want to give somebody 5 shekel. Do me a favor, give him 5 shekel. I'll give you back the 5 shekel later. So you can do that. You get the mitzvah right away because you've authorized him to give tzedakah on your behalf. The fact that you owe him 5 shekel, that's a business. That's a private matter. But in terms of the mitzvah of tzedakah, you clearly have the mitzvah already with shliach. So some mitzvot can be done with shlichut, with a shliach, and other mitzvot cannot. A mitzvah shebegufo, a mitzvah that you personally have to perform, cannot be done as a shlichut. For example, you can't have somebody sit in a sukkah twice and say, have kavana that the second time it's for me. That's not going to work. And you can't have a person eat another kezayit matzah and for the second time, because you're not getting indigestion from matzah. So do me a favor. You love matzah, you know, especially the hardest ones, you know, that they are. So eat another kezayit on my behalf, have a lot of kavana, and I'll get the mitzvah. No such thing. It doesn't work. I mean, that's the famous American joke, and which sometimes, I don't know if you're supposed to laugh or cry, because this kind of humor reflects what's going on in the Jewish world, where somebody was not particularly religious, but occasionally traditional. So a parent passed away, and you know, he sat shiva, but he sat shiva for 3 days because, you know, time is money, and he had to go back to the office and so on. So he has a retired neighbor, and he asked his neighbor if he can continue sitting shiva on his behalf. That wasn't even the shaila. The shaila was whether he has to go into the neighbor to be Menachem Avil. I mean, hey, the neighbor sitting shiva, right? So, you know, you laugh and everything, but, you know, these kind of shaylas are the shaylas that were created by the author of You know, the fellow asked his rabbi if the night of Yom Kippur, you know, he had tickets for the World Series or the playoff games in baseball, and could he, you know, record the game and, you know, after Kol Nidre, you know, watch the game, or better yet, can he record Kol Nidre in shul and go to the game? And, you know, these were taken as, you know, serious shyness. It's never, what can I tell you? So you have the first stage, which is the Kiddushin, which can be done by proxy, although there is a principle in halacha, mitzvah bo yoter mi bishlucho. It is always preferable to do the mitzvah yourself than rather than have a proxy do it. But a proxy can do it. There's a concept called shlucho shel adam kimoto, that if it's a halacha that allows for a shaliach, then it's as if you did it. It's simple as that. It's as if you performed the mitzvah, and so on. But it's considered second rate. First rate is when you yourself do the mitzvah. Just take a look at source number two. It's from the Sefer called Chayei Adam. I know that you haven't seen much of the Chayei Adam in my source pages. But in my previous Gilgul, when I was rabbinating in the United States before my Aliyah in 1977, so it was a small shul in Astoria, Long Island City, Queens. And I inherited from the previous rabbi a Shabbos morning pre-davening shir in the Sefer called Chayei Adam, which is a basic halacha sefer. It predates the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. It's written by Rabbi Avram Danzig. He's the author of the Tfilah Zaka that many of us say before Kol Nidre on Erev Yom Kippur, before the Kol Nidre starts. The same person, Rabbi Avram Danzig. So he wrote on the section of Orach Chaim of halacha, which is like Tfilah and Brachot and Shabbos and Yom Tov. And he also wrote a sefer on what would be considered the Yoredeya section of Shulchan Aruch, and that is the Isa V'Heter on Kashrut and others, and that's called Chochmat Adam. So he has two books, but it's, the sefer I quoted here is called Chayei Adam. And here he says, Mitzvah Bo, what happened was in that shul, I would give this shir, and I remember coming across this halacha, and I remember it very, very vividly because I had a lot of comments about it. Mitzvah bo yotzer mi b'shlucho. That's 40 years ago when I gave a shir on this material. So I'm going to try to recollect what I said about it. Mitzvah bo yotzer mi b'shlucho. It is preferable that you yourself do the mitzvah rather than have a shliach do it. And then he himself adds, Tzarich yun, I have to think about this. Imu yaseh mitzvah lo yeh mehudar kol kach. Let's assume you perform the mitzvah but on your own. But it just doesn't come out great. You know, sometimes you can do a mitzvah, but it, in order to have it done beautifully with proper adornment of the mitzvah and proper aesthetics, you really have to be a pro. You have to be a mumcha. You have to be an expert. But if I do it, it'll be okay. It'll be kosher. Kigon, for example, ha'otzeh lichtov lo sefer Torah ve'ein michtavo mehudar. That is a mitzvah in the Torah that every person is supposed to write a sefer Torah. Or for that matter, parshiot of tefillin or parshiot of mezuzah. Now, if a person is not a trained sefer stam with a gift in hand in calligraphy, it might be a kosher parsha or kosher sefer Torah, but it's going to look sloppy. It's going to look sloppy. I've never seen a sloppy sefer Torah. I've seen some sefer Torah where you don't have to be an expert, but you can see that it's just nicer. You can see the cipher is more of an expert than perhaps the cipher of another Sefer Torah. That, yes. But even that other one is also good. It's nice and so on. But a sloppy Sefer Torah, I've never seen a sloppy Sefer Torah. Sloppy is when kids give you a test to mark and you have not a clue what the kid wrote. That's sloppy. So, you know, if you can have that kind of a Sefer Torah, but you're writing it yourself. By asking a sefer stam to write the sefer Torah for you, that's a shaliach. So do you employ mitzvah bo yoter mebishlucho? It's better for you to do it, and you'll end up with a sloppy product, than asking the shaliach to do it, and you can end up with a beautiful product. So here, the author of the Chayei Adam is not sure how to swing this one. He says, Tzarich Iyun, I have to think about this. Im yaseh mitzvah lo yeh mudar. If I myself do the mitzvah, it's not going to be so perfect in terms of the hidur, the adornment of the mitzvah. Kigon, for example, ha'otzeh lichtov lo sefer Torah ve'ein michtavo mehudar. V'im yiskor sofer, but if he pays a sofer, a professional sofer, yeh mehudar. Eza adif, which one is the preferred option? V'tzarich iyun. And you know, you really have to think about this. And then he directs us to a tshuva of the Mabit, who's Rav Shimon ben Tzemach Duran. I didn't look at the tshuva, I'm sorry, but to see how he handled it. Apparently the Chayyotim had it in his head. The one of the Paiskim once upon time talked about such an issue. So I remember vividly what I said at that shiur 40 years ago. I said, with regard to writing a Sefer Torah, you can have a discussion whether, you know, it's either you and having it done not so perfectly, but it's going to be kosher, but, you know, it's not going to look so great, or having a professional Sefer. You can have such a discussion. But if you're talking about the mitzvah of Brit Milah on your own son, I would humbly suggest that you take a professional moil and not say, maybe I should do it myself, it's my first time around, right? That's what I said 40 years ago, and I stand by it. I haven't changed my mind in all these 40 years. So how can you have a kiddushin al shlichut? So if the flip side of kiddushin, gerushin, divorce, that is done in many, many bati din by proxy. Because the husband lives here, the wife lives there, and the husband doesn't make a trip. And again, the wife wants to receive a get. And there are cooperative bati din throughout the world. And they will have somebody receive the get from the husband. And then this messenger person will bring it. He'll make the trip. And he'll deliver the get to the wife and make a statement, b'fanai nechtab, b'fanai nechtam. It's the opening Mishnah of Masechet Gittin, ha-mevi get b'mdinat hayam, tzarich shomar, b'fanai nechtam, b'fanai nechtam. And it's valid, because it's a get with a shaliach. And a get with a shaliach is perfectly okay. Kiddushin by shaliach, I remember it was there was an attempt to do this many, many years ago. I just lived in Brooklyn in the 60s. To rescue some of the girls from Syria. At that time, Syrians did not allow Jews to emigrate, but for the name of Ichud Mishpachot, unifying families, they could leave. And there were Syrian families in Ocean Parkway area of Flatbush in Brooklyn who were perfectly prepared to go through with a kiddushin. Whether they're going to marry the girl or not afterwards, it was a completely different story. But at least for the purpose of rescuing some of these young girls out of Syria, this was more than contemplated, and I think it was even performed on some limited level. You can have a scenario where there's a chuppah here in Eretz Yisrael, and everything is all set, and the chassan gets called up to the army a day before the wedding because of some national emergency. So what do? So you have two choices. You can postpone the wedding, which is most probably what most families would do, or the chassan will ask a friend of his who wasn't called up, so to be a stand-in, and he'll be Mekadesh al-Tanai. The only thing is the Kala doesn't feel comfortable about this, so she can ask somebody to stand in on her behalf as well, and it doesn't have to be a woman. Could be a woman, could be a man also. Now that's going to look great for the album, especially with the Masada Kedushin standing there. Right, in today's day and age, you never know. Right. So you can, in theory, you can have Kedushin al-Shlichut as well, but nevertheless, mitzvah bo yoter mibishlucho. So that part of the giving of the ring in presence of two witnesses, and doesn't have to be under the chuppah, as I said, doesn't have to have a crowd, you don't need a minyan for that, you need two witnesses, that's all. That part of the ceremony does not involve simcha, and the proof is that al-pi alacha, you can do it on Tisha B'Av. You do that on Tisha B'Av. The part of giving the ring does not demand simcha. And I sometimes question the bands that, you know, strike it up a little bit early in terms of the music of simcha already by the kiddushin part, where you can, if you can do this on Tisha B'Av, I mean, that's a litmus test. Is there simcha associated with this particular act? That the Rabban said that you cannot deny the fact that the kiddushin is part one of the nisuin, of the marriage. It's part one. You can't have nisuin until Tisha B'Av, because nisuin is defined as a moment of simcha and requires a su'udat mitzvah. You can't do this on a fast day. But nevertheless, he said, unlike private avelut, and we dealt with this once in a very, very important shir, the difference between private avelut and national avelut, where he said, in private avilut, a person in shloshim, for sure in shiva, a person in shloshim is not allowed to marry, which means not even go through kiddushin. He's boxed out of this for a month. Of course, sometimes, as it was, it has happened that a person loses a parent shortly before a wedding. So then what's called the esker shayla, how to handle it. I'm not here to be a posek halacha. So there are ways to get around. But in theory, a person who's an avel is not supposed to perform kiddushin for at least a month. After the shloshim, he would be able to anyway. But at least for a month, he would not be able to. But and here we're saying that the kiddushin not only can be done in the 3 weeks, not only can be done in the 9 days, can be done on Tisha B'Av, which is a radical departure from private avilut. And the Rav said, because in the case of private avilut, so a person's first of kin who you're required to sit shiva for, this is a shattering experience, and it's very difficult to overcome. And you need time to exit the period of mourning. And that's why the avilut begins with the intensity of shiva, and then relaxes to shloshim, and then further relaxes to the 12 months after a parent's passing. So the whole purpose of the process of avilut is to gradually bring the person back to normal existence. Whereas in the case of national mourning, the Beit HaMikdash was over 1900 years ago. We don't see it, we don't feel it, we don't sense it. So the purpose of the avilut is to bring us into the spirit of avilut. So you begin with the lower level and you escalate, and then you bring it up to Tisha B'Av, which is the level of shiva. But one thing has to be made clear. Even the loss of Beit HaMikdash, as traumatic and catastrophic event as it was, did not spell out the end of Klal Yisrael. Am Yisrael has a future, always has a future. And the fact that the halakha will allow a chatan and kala to perform the kiddushin act on Tisha B'Av is basically a statement that there is a tomorrow, there is a future. And it's a consoling message. It's almost reflective of what I once heard Rav Lau Sr. My first time that I was in Poland in 1994, March of the Living. And if anybody goes on March of the Living, there's just no person to be with than with Rav Lau. I mean, he really touches it, you know, says it exactly the way it should be said. And he spoke about the Pasuk, Milchama Lashem Ba'amalek Midor Dor, that Torah promises, assures us, it's a very, very tough one, but that there will be every generation is going to have to deal with its Amalek. Amalek, you know, changes costumes each generation, but the same idea, Lashmid La'Hog La'Beit, they're trying to get rid of us, and we have to deal with it. So the question Rav Lau asks is, what ammunition do we have at our disposal to survive the Amalek of every generation? And he quoted the end of the Pasuk, Midor Dor, to guarantee that there will be subsequent generations. That's our weaponry, and you feel it if you ever stood under the chuppah with grandchildren of Holocaust survivors. That's when you really, really, really feel it. You see that it's closing the circle for them, and they recognize that they survived, and there was a reason why they survived, and there's this continuity going on here, and so on. So. Why did I bring this all in terms of Sefer Mitzvot? So let's look at source number four. We'll get back to source one and three in a second. Source number four. Source number four comes from Sefer Mitzvot, the Rambam, Siyum Mitzvot Aseh. The Rambam, after his 14 units of ground rules, which pasuk is a mitzvah, which pasuk is not a mitzvah, then divides the book into two, the positive, 248, the negative, 365. Before he moves on to the negative, after he finishes Mitzvah Reish Mem Chet, number 248, he goes into some type of a summation. He says, from the 248, only about 60 of the mitzvot are ongoing for a Jew in today's day and age. Now he's talking about Egypt 850 years ago. Okay, but it's no different today. In the scenario of this, no Beit HaMikdash, Kohanim and Leviim aren't functioning, there's no Sanhedrin, there's no Melech. You can really drop off. The one who really put out a book on this basis, the abbreviated Book of Mitzvot, was the Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim died in 1933. So it's called Sefer Mitzvot HaKatzar, a miniaturized, abbreviated Sefer Mitzvot, of which he has about 248 mitzvot, 60 positive, and about 190 negative. from the 365. 195 are negative mitzvot. Negative is easier to hang on to, because even though you may not have something, it's still prohibited, negative. But some are categorically not enforced, because you have to have necessary prerequisites, like the existence of Beit HaMikdash, and so on. So the 60 positive out of 248 mitzvot. That's not a lot. That means most of the mitzvot are not binding today. They're positive mitzvot. And you don't need a Rambam for this. Anybody who's a Torah observant Jew, without thinking hard, can list two-thirds of it, can hit 40 of them. You know, maybe 20, you're going to be, oh, I didn't think of this one, I didn't think of that one. But before you start, you know, you think about Kriyat Shema and Birkat HaMazon and Tefillah and Tefillin, which are ready too, and Tzitzis, and Shabbat, and Yom Tov, and Matzah, and Shofar, and Lulav, and Sukkah. You just start going through your Torah life, and you're going to hit 60, you're going to hit 40 mitzvot out of the 60, for sure. They're just every day, especially you start adding on, you know, the belief in God and loving God and having awe for God. Fine, all these mitzvot are betokef. So what does the Rambam do? He says, "Elu shishim mitzvot heim lefi haseder asher sidarnu otam b'minyanenu zeh." According to the numerical, the numbers that I've assigned to the mitzvot. I'm not going to give you the names of the mitzvot. I'm just going to tell you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 11, 12, 21, 23. It's like almost a quarterback, you know, calling the call. He's going to give you the numbers, and he's going to stick in here and there, not for women. It turns out from the 60, 14 are not for women. Okay, besides that, but he feels this need to add it up. So by the way, he's saying that women, so they have 46 mitzvot. On a regular, ongoing basis, and men have 60 mitzvot. Hamitzvah rishona vashenit vashlishit varaviit vachamishit vashishit vashviit vashminit vashiit vazirit. That's the opening 10. So I'm just going to quickly just read it to you, so we don't spend too much time on this, but just get an idea of what the Rambam said here when he names the first 10 mitzvot. And first is to know that God exists, and the other is to know that He's one, and to love God, and to have awe of God, serve God, that's tefillah. The Rambam believes women have a biblical mitzvah of davening. To be close to chachamim, and to try to emulate the character that Kadosh Baruch Hu showed us, the midot tovot, Kiddush Hashem, and then he says Kriyat Shema, but then he says number 10, V'zot ha'asirit ein anashim chayivot b'hem. That's Kriyat Shema. And then he says the 11, also women are not of the 11. I believe 11 is the full blown mitzvah of Talmud Torah. That's a shir in itself, because the Rambam believes that women have a chelik in this mitzvah. But he says in terms of the full blown mitzvah of total involvement Talmud Torah, women are exempt. And the 12th mitzvah is Tefillin Shal Rosh. The 13th mitzvah is Tefillin Shal Yad. And then the 14th mitzvah, I believe, is Tzitzis. So fine, he goes on, and just dropping down to where I have underlined Hamatayim v'shloshesre. That's Resh Yud Gimel. Resh Yud Gimel. It's very towards the very end of the listing of the mitzvot aseh, because it goes to Resh Memchet, and then he ends up and he signs off. He says these are. He tells you there are 46 mitzvot for women, 60 mitzvot for men, and so on. Yofi. So you have here the listing, and why did I bring this off to here? Because the Rambam gave a lot of thought in terms of the sequential order of the mitzvot. It wasn't haphazard how things turned out. There is a wonderful professor, Be'er Sheva, Professor A.B. Feintuch, who wrote a sefer on Sefer Mitzvot, the Rambam, Pikudei Yeshavim, and he has a theory of what the interconnecting links are amongst all the mitzvot of the 248 of the mitzvot aseh and the 365 lot aseh. It all has to do with the Rambam's understanding of mitzvah rationale, ta'ameh mitzvot, and he groups each one into the famous number, 14. 14 categories of ta'ameh mitzvot in the mitzvot aseh, and 14 categories of mitzvot lot aseh of the ta'ameh mitzvot, and he doesn't invent this. It's the Rambam's division of ta'ameh mitzvot found later in life in the Moreh Nevuchim in the third section. The Rambam divides all of the Mitzvot Torah into 14 sections from the point of view of Mitzvah rationale. But now let's take a look on source number 5 and examine on the microscopic examination what exactly is Mitzvah Reish Yud Gimel. So what happens under the chuppah after the ring ceremony, so then somebody reads the ketubah. Now reading the ketubah is not something that the halakha orchestrated at all, not found in the Mishnah or the Gemara. You know that we do have a ketubah, and a ketubah is nothing more than an insurance policy. It's not a marriage contract. Anybody that says it's a marriage contract is wrong. It's an insurance policy. God forbid, if the woman is left alone, by one of two scenarios, the husband passed away or a divorce. So up front, there's some financial backing waiting for her, so she shouldn't be stranded. That's really what a ketubah is all about. But why read the ketubah under the chuppah? So this was an innovation of Rashi 900 years ago. Rashi wanted that before the Middle Ages, today's Chazal, they would do the Kiddushin whenever they did it, but then he would go to his home and she would go back to her father's home, parents' home, and they weren't living yet as married husband and wife. That took place 6 to 12 months later, the Nisu'in. So that's why it was an engagement of sorts. But it was more than an engagement as we say today. If that couple wanted to break up already, before the full Nisu'in, she would need a get. She would need a get. She would need a divorce. So there was something that bound her, but it was interesting. She was bound, she was really prohibited to every other man in the world. Before the Erusin Kiddushin, she was permissible to every man in the world. And now after the Erusin Kiddushin, she's prohibited to every man in the world, including her own husband or future husband. And what happens at the moment of the Nisu'in? Against the background of being prohibited to every man from the world, she becomes permitted to this particular man. And this was done in order that there should be a change of status as she marries. Because if she was permissible to every man in the world yesterday, and now after the wedding she's permissible to this fellow, the Chatan, so vis-a-vis this Chatan, nothing really changed. Because she was permissible to him yesterday as well. And in order to guarantee that there would be a sense of change of status, you have to have an intermediary stage where everybody became forbidden, including the husband, and then next stage would be the permitting of the husband. This is what led to the very, very interesting comment of the Talmud Yerushalmi with regard to the rabbinic prohibition of not eating matzah on Erev Pesach. It says, Kol ha'ochel matzah be'erev Pesach, Kiboel arusato bebeit chamav. What does that mean? That means that eating matzah on Erev Pesach is the same issue as if the couple decide to cohabit before the official nisuin. But she's still living in her parents' home, and the parents were out for dinner, and the young couple was home, and things took place there in a complete manner, which was not befitting. But they did it anyway. So, it's not an Avera, by the way, but it's not a mitzvah, okay? It's not an Avera, it's not Gilui Arayot at all, because bottom line is, she's his wife. But it wasn't really fully put together with the mitzvah of Nisuin. Okay, so what did Chazal want? That if we would be eating matzah on Seder night, and you could have eaten matzah on Erev Pesach an hour or two before, you'd never feel that there was something special about the mitzvah of eating matzah. So the only way you can feel the special status of eating matzah on the night of the Seder is by having both chametz and matzah prohibited for some time period, which is Erev Pesach. So according to some poskim, by the way, it's only Erev Pesach in the afternoon, after Chatzot, that the chametz becomes prohibited biblically. So that's where the matzah becomes prohibited rabbinically. But other poskim say that the matzah is prohibited rabbinically from the morning of Erev Pesach. But whatever it is, a person goes through the 14th of Nisan with the prohibition of chametz and matzah together. And then as the Seder night enters, against the background where bread, chametz and matzah were prohibited, now we eat matzah. So you feel the change in status of the matzah. And that's what the Yerushalmi says, Kol ha'ochel matzah be'erev Pesach, kiboel arusato bebeit chamav. That's the imagery that you have there. So what was the Nisu'in? What exactly does Nisu'in mean? What took place 6 to 12 months later, which we do now 5 to 10 minutes later under the chuppah, it was the concept of knisa l'reshut, that the wife has made the transition from being in her parents' home, and now she's in the husband's home. It's a moving of reshut from one domain to the next. Now, where does that take place? So, in Ashkenazi circles, it takes place in the yichud room. That's why Ashkenazim are careful to have two edim outside the yichud room. Sfaradim don't have yichud at all. So where does it take place? It takes place when they go home after the wedding. Do you have edim there? No. There's a concept in halacha called anan sahadeh. We're all witnesses. We need two witnesses to know that they went home. Everybody realized that. So it's like it's yadua. It's known. But in order to the public to sense that there was such a change in status, we build a roof over the head of the chasan kala. That's a chuppah. That's the chuppah. The chuppah is the symbolic home, roof over the couple. But you know, the roof is supposed to have walls, and here it only has four poles, right? So some say that that's the minhag of the kala going around seven times. So she builds the walls. She's completing the binyan. So why seven times? So one reason is because that's Kabbalistic. Why not? You know, the number seven shows up in every Kabbalistic configuration. And the other is, if you ever see the way they build walls in this country, you better do it seven times. Or else it's going to fall down, right? You know, some people have a minhag only three times, whatever. And some kallahs just don't want to do it. And if a kallah tells me she doesn't want to do it, I don't push it. Like, that's not a halacha. It's a minhag. It's a minhag, you know. Whatever reason, doesn't want to do it. Okay, Misanta. But you have to worry about two things. One is that she doesn't get tangled in a gown, which happens. And the other is, you know, that she doesn't do six or eight. Somebody should be the official counter. There's always a mess up. How many have done? Oh, no. Anybody counting? No. So I always make sure that somebody can count. But so that's what the symbolic house is. That's the chuppah. So that's part of Nisuin. And furthermore, what else does the Nisuin require? Sheva brachot. Sheva brachot. So that's what we do under the chuppah. That's why you have the seven brachot. So in essence, the mitzvah act is the kiddushin, and that's where there's a birkat ha-mitzvah, she-kidshanu b'mitzvotav, v'tzivanu al ha-rayot, v'asar lanu et ha-rusot, v'itir lanu et ha-nusuot, right? V'asar lanu et ha-rusot, v'itir lanu et ha-nusuot. We prohibited the arusa mikudeshet, she's prohibited, and now we're permitting v'itir lanu, it's all part of the same mitzvah. That's why there's no birkat ha-mitzvah after the reading of the ketubah, because it's all one mitzvah. It leads to the other mitzvah. Similar to, mashal may not be 100% analogous, but we make the bracha on the searching for chametz. You don't have to make another bracha when you burn the chametz. It's already vitzivanu al biru chametz. It's one bracha. The mitzvah comes in two parts, tonight and tomorrow. So too, the mitzvah comes in two parts, now and in 6 months, or now and in 10 minutes. So, but it's the same birkat ha-mitzvah. V'tzivasar lanu et ha-rusot, v'hitir lanu et ha-nusuot, lanu aidei, chupa v'kidushin. What does that mean, chupa v'kidushin? It should be aidei kidushin v'chupa. What comes first? The kidushin comes first, and the chupa comes afterwards. The fact that they're standing on a chupa is of no consequence, but the purpose of the chupa is the nisu'in. It's the roof over the chasen kala. So shouldn't it be Aydei Chupa, Aydei Kiddushin V'chupa? So here's where manuscripts come into the play. So here, although I think that there are manuscripts that are correct and our version is incorrect, I'm the last one to change it, even though the Rambam would have changed it, he had the guts to change. But there is a version that says, Baruch Ata Hashem, Mekadesh Amo Yisrael, Aydei Chupa B'Kiddushin, with a bet. Through the act of kiddushin, you move to the chuppah. Aidei chuppah, not v'kiddushin with a vav, A and B, but A, but B because of A. Aidei chuppah, b'kiddushin. Through kiddushin, now we can move on to the chuppah. And that's what it is. Aidei chuppah, b'kiddushin. There are some Masarei Kiddushin who are makpid. Just of late, I've heard some Masarei Kiddushin say that bracha. The Rambam, by the way, in the manuscripts of the Rambam, simply says, Baruch Ata Hashem, Mekadesh Amo Yisrael. I mean, the bracha says, V'tzivanu al arayot, V'vasal lanu terusot, V'itir lanu terusot, Lanu ayedei chupa v'kidushin, or chupa b'kidushin, Baruch Ata Hashem, Mekadesh Amo Yisrael. That's how the bracha ends in the Rambam's manuscripts. Why do we emphasize manuscripts? Go to every Rambam print, and it's going to say, Ayedei chupa v'kidushin. What happened? So the Rav Son, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, taught us a thing or two about manuscripts and printings. The printings of the Rambam took place in Europe. And many times when the printers were printing from Rambam manuscripts, they themselves, in their heads, had Nusach Ashkenaz in their minds. So they set the print according to the Nusach Ashkenaz, irrespective of what the manuscripts were telling them. They would think that the manuscript was wrong. It was a scribal error. You had a dumb cipher. You left out the words. Which can happen. Which has happened in manuscripts. So the printers, they suspected that the word Ayidei Chubavi Kedushin erroneously got blotted out. So we're going to make a taifa. We're going to put it back in. So now you have Nusach Ashkenaz in the printed. But if you go through Rav Kapach's printed Mishnah Torah based on extant manuscripts from Yemen, so there you have the proper original text of the Rambam, Mekadesh Amo Yisrael. But nevertheless, so we say Ayidei Chupa V'Kidushin, some say Ayidei Chupa B'Kidushin, and some say that you know what it means, Ayidei Chupa V'Kidushin? The order is correct. But the word Chupa doesn't mean the Chupa on top of the Chazan Kala. It means the Badekin. When you cover the Kala's... The Badekin. You cover the Kala's head. The Badekin. As we say, the chosen covers the face of the kala, which some say is a reference to Rivka Imenu, Yitzchak. Fine, takes us all the way back there, and you know the joke is that those shiduchim where the chosen really hardly knows the kala at all. So what does he say at the bedekin? He says, "Nice to meet you." So, do you know that there are some Masari Kedushin who will insist that the two witnesses of the Chuppah are there at the Badekin? Not only the mothers-in-law and everybody else is standing around the Kala, but the Edim should be there too to witness this, according to some views, is the real Chuppah. And if it needs two Edim, so they should be there as well. That's not the Halakha, but it's just what's called the Chumrah. And when it comes to weddings, the Chumrah factory, Chumrah vit mill works overtime, mamash overtime. But you need the Edim, first of all, to see the Kinyan on the Ketubah, which I always do before the Chuppah, Kakatuv, business before pleasure. Let's just get the business part. But I don't like when they do it under the Chuppah, breaks the decorum, breaks the whole rhythm, and you have a pen, you know, and then everybody's signing and this and that, nobody knows what to do with themselves. Then the music starts up and they don't know when to end. So the it's always best that it's done before, and you need to aid them for that. You need to aid them just simply watch the giving of the ring, and then you need to aid them according to Ashkenazim at the Yichud. That's the functions of the Edim. But I say again, some have a fourth function. Ayidei Chupa v'Kiddushin, first Chupa, then Kiddushin. Chupa means the Badekin. But that's not their understanding. So it's really the Chupa that's afterwards, Ayidei Chupa v'Kiddushin. So the Chupa has the Brachot, the Sheva Brachot, and that's the symbolic movement to the new domain. The new domain, the new Rishud, has halachic ramifications with regard to a couple where they come from different custom, different Ashkenazi, Sephardi, Yemenite, whatever it might be. So what's the minhag of the Kala? The answer, every Rav in the book is going to say, she adopts automatically the minhag of the husband. What happens in reality is a different story. What happens many times is a mizug, a type of mishmash of both minhagim, which in the case of Medinat Yisrael today, I see as very positive, because beyond kibbutz galiot, so kibbutz galiot took place at Nefesh B'Nefesh yesterday, right? 201 people came. Fine, that's kibbutz galiot. Mizug galiot happens under the chuppah. When you start hearing different negunim, different melodies for the brachot under the chuppah, then you know this is mizug galiot, right? Like in my marriage, I was into marriage, you know, Galitziana and Yeka. I mean, that's a class A intermarriage, right? And by the way, Yeka Yemenite is actually a very, very smooth type of. That's what makes my wife's family cousins to Rav Kapach. I mean, if we're going to have Yemenites, let's go to the top. And Rav Kapach is the elite. The elite top family, Torah family of Yemen. And his son, David Kapach, who lives in Ofra, married Ayala, whose father was first cousin to my father-in-law. Nice yekke, and so on. So they work out well, because both are on time, you know, so no, I'm telling you, there are a lot of tchunot. I don't know what happened. You know, some telepathy went between Frankfurt and Senna. But they do work out very, very well. But Yeke and Galciano sometimes can be issues. And you know, Hungarians and Polish don't ask, you know, how do you make your gefilte fish? By you know, that's like big, major. That's major. It's like, sure. I mean, shidduchim get broken up on these things. How do you make a gefilte fish? Sweet with sugar, without sugar, right? Sure. Okay, so let's take a look at now source number 5 at the mitzvah of kiddushin. So it says the Rambam in Sefer Mitzvot says v'mitzvah hareshu gimel, the 213th mitzvah, shetzivanu liv'ol b'kiddushin v'latet davar b'yad ha'isha o b'shtar o b'biyah. The Rambam says here that the mitzvah in the Torah, what is part 1? You don't see a word in the Chumash that the Chatan is supposed to give the Kala anything. You don't see it. All you see is the Torah seems to indicate that there is something before the Nisu'in. But what is it? It's actually sexual contact for the first time. Now that's amazing. Ki kach ish isha u ve'ala. Ve'ala bi'ila is bi'an, is sexual contact. And to make matters more troubling, that's supposed to be done with 2 witnesses. Now, how can you do that with 2 witnesses? No, without kidding aside, how do you do that with 2 witnesses? So the Gemara says, "Hein hein edei bi'ah, hein edei yichud." It really means yichud, and when the 2 witnesses are there, the couple doesn't have to do anything because it's not a new thing to do. But that is considered. You put them in a room for a few minutes. In theory, things could have happened. I mean, you know, at the wedding, things shouldn't happen. But in theory, they could have happened. And that's really the purpose of the Edim. Now, that, if that was done as an act of Kiddushin, that's what the Torah had in mind. But then, the Rambam figures out that there's got to be another way to do this from a biblical point of view. And he says that's with a shtar, a document. And what's a shtar? Not a ketubah. Shtar means a piece of paper that you write on it, Hareat Mekudeshet Li B'Shtar Zu Kedat Moshe Yisrael, and get the witness to sign on it, and the Chatan gives it to the Kala. Just, where does he derive that from? The Gemara derives it from get, from divorce. Because from get, it says clearly, V'chatav La Sefer Kritut V'Natan B'Yada, and you have to write a document and deliver it to our hand. That says clearly, get, no questions asked. It's very clear in the Chumash. And then what? The Torah doesn't have to tell us a story, what the girl's going to do afterwards or what he's going to do afterwards. Who cares? Who cares? What is this, a soap opera? But then the Torah says, V'yatza'a v'hayta l'ish acher. And then she gets married to another guy. What are you telling me? Then she gets married to another guy. I understand. Of course she can get married to another fellow. I need the Torah to tell me a saga? And then after the get, guess what? You know, she meets another guy. The Torah wanted to focus on the word v'yatza v'hayeta l'ish acher. V'yatza means she exited, v'hayeta means she's entering. So there's a connection between these 2 words, v'yatza and v'hayeta, teaching you what's true for v'yatza is true for v'hayeta. If the yitzia, if the get is done with the document that is delivered to our hand, so the entering into the kiddushin can also be done with the document. And then the Gemara, the Rambam comes up with another fascinating proof. He says, the word in the Torah of Kiddushin is Erusin. Now, the biblical Hebrew, the Samach is a sin. You know, are you familiar with that? It's not a Samach. A sin and Samach are interchangeable. The biblical Samach is a letter Sin. Sometimes the Paitanim do this as well. Hasigui va'segev l'chay olamim. It's the words are with a sin, but it plays the role of the Samach in the scheme of the alphabet of the Haderet Emunah. It's done all the time. It's a known thing that the sin and the for example, in Aramaic, anan sahadis. I used the word before, that we are all witnesses that the couple's going home alone, so the Sephardim dispense with yichud. Anan sahadeh. How's that spelled in the Gemara? Samach hei dalad yud. Anan sahadeh. We are edim. Do you remember the phrase in Parshat Vayetze where Yaakov and Lavan sign a pact, and they call it gal'ed, gal'ed, which means a little heap that's of a testimony. It's a monument, and it says ve'lavan kara laze yegar sahaduta. It's sin. It's a sin, not a samach. Sin, but same word. Sahaduta means gal'ed. Yigar sahaduta means gal'ed. Just direct translation. So the sin is a samach in Aramaic, in rabbinic Hebrew. Rabbinic Hebrew. So erusin in the Mishnah, the Gemara, me'ureset, is a samach in the Torah. And that's the word me'orasa. And the Torah says in Parshat Ki Tetze about a na'ara me'orasa the ish. Which means she wasn't married, there's no nisuin yet, but she's an arusa already, me'orasa. But then there's a case that the Torah says, that a na'ara me'orasa, but it says na'ara betula me'orasa. How can she be a na'ara betula me'orasa if the only biblical way to create erusin is by some type of sexual contact? How can she be a betula? So it's got to be another way. And the Rambam says it's the document, it's a shtar. What's missing from this whole discussion? What we do is called Kesef Kiddushin. Kesef Kiddushin is some type of either money or monetary value, pruta or shaveh pruta. And that's why we use a ring. And the ring, the edim are always asked by the rab beside a Kiddushin, you think it's worth a pruta? I mean, that's for sure worth a pruta, that's for sure. But they're supposed to answer affirmatively, and so on. So that's what we do. That's not in the Chumash at all. So we have a type of rabbinic add-on here. Does that mean all of our Kiddushin is only Midrabanan? So the Rambam was faced with this problem, and people wrote him letters, and they wrote his son's letters, apparently by the Rambam's day, it wasn't even clarified enough. And what happened was, at the end of the Rambam's life, he threw his hands up and rewrote a few sections in Hilchot Ishud, where it says clearly, O Kesef, O Shtar, O Biya, either one, take your pick. It's all biblical, and that's it. Where did they derive it from? The Gemara derives it from the purchase of the Ma'arat HaMachpelah. Because the Torah says in Parshat Ki Tetze, with regard to marriage, Ki Yikach Ish Isha, you'll take a betrothed, you'll take a wife. And with regard to the purchase of the Ma'arat HaMachpelah, which is in the news these days, UNESCO and everything's on Zezan Gesund und Stark, they should all pay the Mamash. And I'm not of somebody who curses, but this Mamash. So it's disgusting what they've done. So it says, Natati kesev hasadeh kach mimeni. So the word kach is used, and the word kesev is used. So you see there's some type of connection with the word yikach and kesev. You see you can use kesev for kiddushin too. It's a flimsy type of gzera shava, but nevertheless it's employed, and the Rambam upgrades kesev kiddushin. It's biblical. He always thought it was biblical, but its proof was rabbinic, but the status was biblical. Nobody should worry about it. People didn't buy into that. So the Rambam changed his text, and he says it's biblical. Fine, you happy now? And he did it deliberately, and his son, Rabbi Avraham ben Rambam, has to authorize the changing of texts of the Rambam to conform to the Rambam's latest thinking on this question in life. But don't you think it's strange that you have to go to the Ma'arat HaMachpelah to derive the din of Kesef Kiddushin? I remember the Rav teaching us, one of the last things I heard from him, I was already in Eretz Yisrael, but I went back to visit in the 80s, and I heard the Rav say this in a shir, in Parshat Shlach, that's just not such a long time ago, he said, you notice that never does it say that Moshe Rabbeinu sends meraglim, spies. In retrospect, it turns out to be meraglim. That's why in Dvarim he says, vayiraglu ota. But what does it say in Shlach? Scouts. Tourists, viaturu at Eretz Canaan, right? Avshalom Kor says this is where the word tourism comes from. Viaturu at Eretz Canaan. Should scout the land. What did Moshe Rabbeinu think? He thought that Am Yisrael is getting married to the land. You're getting married to the land. And just like before you get married, you have to have a period of getting to know you, getting to know all about you, as in the word, king and I, right? And that's really what the Erusin is all about. A period of engagement where you get to know the person. You get to know who we're talking about. Moshe Rabbeinu felt it would be important for Am Yisrael to get a photo album of what Eretz Yisrael was all about, to get a report of what Eretz Yisrael was all about, so they should fall in love with the country, literally fall in love with the country. So the purpose of the Meraglim was really a purpose of Erusin. It was to betroth the land to the people. And if that's the case, the first moment of possession in Eretz Yisrael was Hebron, was the Marat HaMachpelah. So Chazal felt comfortable deriving the laws of marriage from that moment in Parshat Chayei Sarah. And unfortunately, the Meraglim came back and they didn't like the kala. So there's not on the page, but the Rambam says, look at source number one. It's the last thing we'll do. And the two lines at the end of source number one, top of the page. V'chein ha'ish ein ra'ui lo shi'kadesh k'tana, even though theoretically you can marry a girl who's under bat mitzvah, but don't do it. V'lo yikadesh isha at shi'ena v'teye k'shera be'enav. This is an add-on of the Rambam. The Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara says, Asul adam shi'kadesh isha at shi'ena sh'ne'emar v'avta l'reacha kamocha. The Rambam says, it's not like a kazayit matzah. You take a peek and now you can go do the kiddushin. No, there's got to be a period of time of acquaintance, of really getting to know her. Shema lo timsachen ve'enav ve'nimtza migarsha o shochev ima ve'hisonav, which was probably worse. So the Rambam believes that there was this need for some type of transitionary period, and that's why the Torah wanted that there should be the Erusin first and then the Nisuin afterwards, to guarantee a healthier relationship. And if it does, and from here you see clearly that if in this period of time the couple feels they're not suited to each other, just break it off now. And it'll be better for everybody, and you'll get a fresh start with all the pain. You'll get over it, and you'll move on. But this idea of Achir Ena, to take Shera Be'enav, this is an important add-on that the Rambam said. Okay, so we ended up seeing some material today from the Sefer Mitzvot, and next week in Mitzvah Hashem again will be our last year of the season. We'll have a few weeks of a break. Okay. Next week we'll have a share. We'll have a share next week. And then there'll be a few weeks.